of nights of hollow leisure spent. We wandered down these tree-lined streets, down uncertain.
Better keep your ear close to the ground. Inside the longest on your bankers too. Let's get up and learn those rules. Weatherman and the crazy chief, one says sun and one says sea. AM and FM, the PM too, turning out that boogaloo. Gets you up and I guess you out, but how long can you keep it up? Give me Honda, give me Sonic, so cheap and real phony. Hong Kong dollar, Indian cents, English pounds and Eskimo pence. Sophistication, seen the ads, cause it's nice. Better work hard, I seen the price. Never mind that, it's time for the bus. We got to work, and you're one of us. Folks go slow in a place of work. Minutes drag and the hours jump. Yeah, we're bye-bye. Wave bye-bye to the boss. It's our profit, it's his loss. But anyway, the lunch bell ring. Take one out, do y'all. Chief Boyga. What do we have for entertainment? Cops kicking gypsies on the pavement. Now the news has led to attention. Lunar landing of the Venice Convention. Italian mobster shoots a lobster. Seafood restaurant gets out of hand. Car in the fridge, a fridge in the car. My cowboy's doing TV land. Sweat some more. The sun will sink and we'll get out the door. It's no good for man to work in cages. Hit the town, he drinks his wages. Your friend, your sweat. But did you notice you ain't getting? Your friend, your sweat. But did you notice not getting anywhere? Don't you ever stop long enough to start. Take your car out of that gear. Don't you ever stop long enough to start. Get your car out of that gear. Call the mobs, a fire at Engels. Came to the checkout at the 7-Eleven. Mobs was good, but he has sense. Engels, Lenin, the necessary events. What do we got? Yeah. What do we got? Yeah. What do we got? Magnificent. What do we got? King and Mahatma Gandhi went to the park to check on the game, but they was murdered by the other team. Went on to win 50-0. You can be true, you can be false. You'll be given the same reward. Socrates, a Milhouse Dixon, both went the same way through the kitchen. Plato the Greek or in Tin Tin. Who's more famous than the billion millions? Who's Flash? Vacuum cleaner sucks up budgie.
And that was Clash. Winter Hours before The Clash there. That was a band called Winter Hours with The Longest Century. Winter Hours is a sort of one album or maybe two album band from upstate New York, where I'm originally from. They're from the Albany area. And they put out an album in the 90s. Or 89, actually, is the date I'm seeing up here on the screen. And they were excellent, and I wish they had continued making music. Maybe they did. Maybe they're making music. I'm just not aware of their what they ended up doing. And after that, The Clash with Magnificent Seven, Marx and Engels, The Necessary Sense, and all that. Great song from their album, The Sandinista, from Sandinista, not The Sandinista, Sandinista, back in 1999. And you are listening to Socialist Alternative Radio, talk and music from a working class, democratic socialist perspective. We're in our second hour of that talk and music. And we're going to give a public service announcement, because that's what we do here at WMFO 91.5 FM. Tufts Educational Radio. We want to educate you. Pedestrian safety. Pedestrian safety is a two-way street. Both drivers and walkers need to do their part to keep roads safe. When you're driving, drive at safe speeds. Drive alert. And always scan the road and sidewalks ahead for pedestrians. It's the law to stop for pedestrians when they're crossing at both marked crosswalks and intersections. When you're walking, remember that drivers may not see you. Continue to watch for traffic as you cross. Always use crosswalks and obey all traffic signals. A life-saving message from your friends at WMFO in Medford. Now, why did I read that PSA? Is there any other reason other than just randomness? Yes, there is. Apparently, there's a rally today downtown about, you know, highway safety and people dying from car deaths and stuff like that. People dying from car accidents and stuff like that. So I was interested to hear that today. I mean, it's a good thing to protest if it makes the connections. I have no idea. Maybe they're doing a perfect protest. I'm not criticizing.
Where is this? By Park Street?
Yeah. Yeah, right downtown at the Capitol and of Massachusetts, which is in Boston. And, yeah, so, like, if they make the connections to funding mass transit and funding ways, you know, to make highways safer and all that, and get that money from big business, the super rich and all that, then I would be right on board. And I think a lot of other socialists and activists would be. I hope they make those connections. I really don't know much about it, but I do know that from my own experience that it's extremely crowded on the roads right now. And I'm not just, again, anecdotal, but there's been studies and articles about it in the corporate media as well. So I'm not the only one thinking that way, that the commutes are getting longer because of the volume of cars on the road. Public transit is not getting nearly enough money. And it's expensive, you know. I mean, this $2.75 one-way fare in the subway, if you don't have a monthly pass, which is really expensive. Commuter rail passes are really expensive. Yeah. Look into this if you don't believe me. And that hurts, man. There's times
my pass
now,
doesn't I get half off?
Yeah.
On the monthly link.
Yeah.
Because of the hospital. If not, it would have cost me $85. So it only cost me half of that, was $42.50.
Yep.
But that doesn't include I can get on the commuter rail and go to Haverhill or go anywhere else.
No, it doesn't.
That would be a separate thing. But I guess they're doing this weekend thing now. It's like $10.
Oh, I didn't hear about that. Good.
Yeah, they extended it from the summertime. Okay. So, you know, if you wanted to go somewhere else beyond Boston on a commuter rail, you could on a weekend.
The thing about commuter rail also is that I was seriously going to do commuter rail to work. And I found out the trains were just so infrequent. That it doesn't. It's ridiculous.
You gotta look at the schedule. You gotta stick by that.
No,
schedule.
But I mean, yeah, that's what I mean. That's what I mean. You know? If you don't stick to their schedule,
this ain't France. So it's every hour, you know, or every half hour, you got a train.
But it was also really expensive. even a subsidized pass was really expensive. And I used to have a pass, even though I'm mostly driving now, to get around when I'm in the city, and you know, mostly commuting. And that was just became too expensive. You know, when you have to cut, like, we're trying to cut everything just to save money because we're hemorrhaging. You know, we're on our way down to nothing based on debt and so on, like everybody else, like a lot of other people. That you know, saving $40, $50, even in a subsidized pass is a necessary savings. So now, if I have to go somewhere, even like two stops from where I work, that's going to be $5.50. Right? That's way too much money. It's way too much money. So now I'm trying, you know, can I walk? Can I, you know, and that's not always an easy answer because, like, for my job, they'll say sometimes, oh, you have to go to a meeting in Harvard Square, and I work in Central Square. This is in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And that's one subway stop, but I have to get there in a certain amount of time and get back in a certain amount of time, so I can't walk. I have to take the subway. They're not going to reimburse me for the $5.50. It's going to cost to go one stop.
you know? And there's a lot of little...
Even the bus number one that takes you to Harvard? That one that goes to Dudley?
Yeah, I could take the bus. It's less frequent than the subway.
It's a little less money, but still.
Less frequent than the subway. A little less money. Still up there.
Yeah. $2.10.
There's also actually a shuttle bus that Harvard has, but that rarely comes around. So anyway, just one example of a million where you get screwed on, you know, like the cut, death by a thousand cuts under capitalism if you work for a living or try to work for a living. By the way, on this show, when we talk about working class, we're not using any sort of strict cliche definition of working class. We mean everybody just about, except, you know, that tries to sell their labor as you have to if you're a worker under capitalism. So it could be someone that's maybe doing fairly well with a professional job, down to someone that is unemployed, long-term unemployed, but should be working and wants to work but can't because they're not getting hired for some reason. So it's a very elastic definition of the working class. Most working class people in the world are women. So, you know, if you have this idea of a cliched blue collar, which is, you know, I'm not denigrating blue collar work at all. I've done it. Blue collar, you know, white male or something. That's just not the reality of the world working class or even in the United States. But people hear that term because, you know, the corporate media and the educational system, they don't want to use the word working class very much. At least in my experience, they want to use the word middle class. And that kind of dumps a lot of different people into this category. Truly middle class is somebody that doesn't have to actually work for a living. They own a small business or a small firm of some sort. And they're working there and they want to work their way up into the upper class, you know, and have a chance maybe of making it. Or what happens with a lot of middle class people is they start sliding back down, back into the working class. But working class is someone that, no, I can't quit work tomorrow. I got to look for a job at least. And if I can't get one, I'm in big trouble. I got to rely on sketchy, limited, temporary unemployment benefits or some sort of cobble together some sort of social welfare, which there's very little of in the United States. Or, you know, start mugging people or something, you know. And that's really, you know, you're still a worker if you can't find work. And a working class is a very broad definition. Just want to get that out of the way there. Hey, another public service announcement kind of related to the last one. I wanted to add to the last one, though. Bike riders. Now, you're a bike rider. I'm not addressing you. I know you're a good bike rider. But I want to say that bike riders are, at least in Cambridge, they got an attitude. So they don't stop at red lights. They don't care about pedestrians. I've got as much danger. Well, not as much, but I've got a certain amount of danger coming from bikes running me down as I do cars. And I'm getting a little angry about that, but whatever.
Well, that's why I ride a lot. If you notice, I try to do a lot of the, what they call the bike paths.
Yeah, great.
You know, like link it up.
No, I love bike riding and then,
You know, I'm not endangering myself or endangering pedestrians.
Yeah. I love bike riding. There's just kind of, I mean, this goes back to the 80s where like, riding a bike was it's part of a lifestyle politics thing, you know, the whole thing with environmentalism where, if I just do green things as an individual, I will help stop, like, say, global warming or climate change or vast pollution that happens. And I'm sorry, well-meaning, I understand you. I do that stuff too a lot. But really, it's the big corporations that do most of the pollution,
and the
including the military.
You'd be surprised how much waste I see at where I work.
Yeah. So unless you have an economic system where you can plan the economy democratically, both in one country but also internationally, right, then you're not really going to be able to change. We will not be able to change the course the capitalism is on towards destroying the environment for human habitation.
Oh, you're taking shorter showers?
A brilliant article by Derek Jensen, J-E-N-S-E-N, called something about why shorter showers won't cut it or something like that. But just look up showers and Jensen, J-E-N-S-E-N. It was in Orion magazine originally, but it's been reprinted in many, many publications. I found it recently in a deep green sort of... strong, from their point of view, ecological movement magazine or online thing. And they were reprinting it. Yeah, so Derek Jensen, something about why shorter showers, .. Can't remember the exact end of it. And he just makes and other people have done this in other formats, but his is just well-written, very well-written. And he just equates, you know, individual... survival, individual green strategies based on individuals, even to the point of survival strategies that people would use to maintain a green lifestyle, to the enormity of the problem coming from, like you said, Diego, institutions, the big businesses,
the military,
and you mentioned the hospitals as well. So it's big institutions that are polluting. And the counter argument often is, well, if everybody did this, .. Well, that's the point, right? Everybody's not going to switch to a green lifestyle because, number one, political movements aren't won by changing every last single person's mind. That's religion. That's proselytizing religion or something. Political movements are, you're always going to have an intransigent minority, even majority sometimes, that doesn't want to change, but the pressure of a political movement, of a mass movement, or a revolutionary movement, which is also a mass movement, forces them. There is an element of force in social change. That's the way it is. Do you think that the king of France walked to the guillotine?
No.
Let me help you, sir.
He was led.
Let me help you, sir. So, you know, that's really what we're talking about. We can't play around and think that we're going to convince
him. So how does this work? Do I put my head right? Yeah, just right there. Just don't worry. Yeah.
You're fine.
It won't hurt.
So, I mean, you can't have this thing where you're going to convince every last greedy person to adopt a green lifestyle. By the time that happened, and it would never happen fully, you're dead. The planet is dead, for at least for human habitation. And so, and that's true not only of environmental causes, but other causes as well. It's not like we're picking on well-meaning environmentalists. I'm a well-meaning environmentalist myself. I just don't have any illusions that my individual things that I do help anything really. They help maybe a little bit, tiny, tiny fraction of a little bit in my immediate area. And then that's about it, you know? Like, it's going to take debate, discussion, and sometimes outlawing certain things. You know, if we ever get to the point where, say we get a handle on food production, which is also the big capitalist producing food. That's part of what I meant by capitalist. And they, like you said, the institutions causing, you have like these big pig farmers and stuff shooting out pollution and methane. Yeah. You have the big coal companies still polluting the hell out of the environment. And
I was reading Sinclair's
plastic production,
The Jungle.
Yeah.
That's a good book to, yeah. The original.
That wasn't Sinclair. That was Upton Sinclair.
Sinclair.
S-I-N-C-L-A-I-R. Yes, he was a socialist, by the way, yes. Upton Sinclair. Ran as a socialist for governor of California one time. Anyway, so, we're not picking on environmentalists. We're just saying there's problems under capitalism that cannot be solved through individual consumer choice. I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. Also, if you really go deep with this analysis, say I'm a working class person and I truly believe my individual actions will be the key to changing things. Can I really afford the vegan lifestyle? Can I really afford not to go to the dollar store sometimes and avoid all that plastic that's in there? Can I really afford to, I have kids. Can I ride my bike every day? You know, can I put my kids in the back of my bike in the winter? Maybe they'll get run over by a truck or something, you know? Can I really, you know, all these choices, all these green choices that are expensive as hell and working class people can't afford them. Can I go to Whole Paycheck and get the organic food? I'm wrestling with that one directly. I can't. I've limited what I can buy at Whole Paycheck down to I get their overpriced lettuce because it's organic. And that's about all I buy there. I don't even buy their tomatoes anymore because they're so expensive. So I'm a market basket buying tomatoes that probably have like a layer of pesticide on them that's going to like, you know, hurt me down the road. But I can't afford the expensive tomatoes, you know. So there's a million choices in a green lifestyle that are too freaking expensive for working people, including so-called mass transit, which is talking about a mass transit option. I know people that walk to avoid paying that $2.75. I do it. And I know people that make less money that do that, you know? So, no. We can't afford it. It's not going to work. Stop with blaming ordinary people for working class people for environmental destruction. We don't vote on plastic production. We don't vote on how much coal is going to be produced in this country, you know? So don't blame us, you know? It's not a democratically planned economy. It is a capitalist economy. A capitalist economy is based on the strictest hierarchies, you know? The richest run the show, and it's a very few of them, and they're going to control what's going to be produced, how it's going to be produced, which is very important. and how it's going to be distributed. And in this case, it's not distributed. It's sold for profit. So anyway, that's what I wanted to add to that last PSA. We'll do another public service announcement. Public transit versus walking. If you take public transportation, good for you. You're helping to save the environment and money, too. So this goes against exactly what I was just saying. But if you aren't getting all the exercise you should be, you might want to consider walking directly to your destination instead of using public transport. Depending upon the distance, once you factor in the time it takes to make your way to the T-stop, wait, and then get to your final station, from the station, walking the whole trip can be often faster. And even when it isn't, you're getting good exercise and saving even more on money. For example, it can take, they give an example here. For example, it can take 45 minutes to walk where you want to go, instead of the 30 minutes using the T, you'll get 3/4 of an hour of exercise and fresh air for just an extra 15 minutes of your time. That's a real healthy deal. A public service message from WFMN Medford Tufts. Boy, that turned out different than I thought. A public service message from WFMN Medford Tufts Educational Radio. I thought it was about exercise and walking, which I kind of agree with, except again, I'm sorry, well-meaning liberal people. Where I live, for example, and there's many places like this, walking is very unsafe. There's no sidewalks. So again, you're talking about...
You live
in
one of those streets?
Yes. You're talking about macro solutions, not micro ones. You're talking about mass political movements to get things done, not your individual self-sacrifice. So anyway, I will just, we're going to do a quick break, another musical interlude, if that's okay.
Yeah.
And we'll be back right after that. That was John Lennon with sort of the unofficial theme song of our show, which we usually play at the end sometimes, and that is called Imagine, and it's a brilliant song. And John Lennon was you know, grappling with serious left-wing politics for a while. And that's to be welcomed. He's a brilliant songwriter. Comes from a working-class background, of course. You know how people rate...
Liverpool, right?
Yeah, people rate which Beatles they like. Who's your favorite Beatle?
John Lennon.
John Lennon, yeah.
Nobody else. The other guys I don't know, and I hate Paul McCartney.
Everyone hates Paul McCartney.
I hate Paul McCartney, and the other guys are kind of like just there, you know what I mean? Yeah, I don't really know much about the other guy. But yeah. John Lennon and McCarthy, yeah, John Lennon, man.
I would have liked to
McCarthy meet, just says,
I would have liked to have met all of them, including even Paul, back when they were playing clubs in Berlin or something. But once they got big, it was inevitable they got messed up, you know?
He did that song with Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Paul McCarthy back in the 80s.
Hey, let's get back to the midterm elections a little bit. We do have an article. There is an article in the latest, it's on the website. It probably will be in print soon, in socialistalternative.org, about the midterm elections. An article by Tom Crean for Socialist Alternative in the U.S. And it has, an analysis that there was a limited blue wave. You know, we're using that metaphor, a blue wave was coming before the midterm elections. And I've heard the corporate media use that as well, that, you know, talk about how it was limited. We put forward that there was an overall rejection of Trump by the electorate. Republicans were relieved, actually, though, that their losses weren't worse, and many progressive workers and youth and activists and so on were disappointed the outcome wasn't more decisive. This is not to be seen, I'm not quoting here, I'm just saying this is not to be seen as an endorsement for the Democrats. I mean, there's a, you know, in Socialist Alternative, we really want to see an independent left party of the, then, you know, 99%, so to speak, get off the ground. And, you know, so when someone like Walker, for example, loses in, which he lost, you know, that guy, what was his first name? Walker, something Walker. The governor of the anti-union governor of Wisconsin, horrible guy, Scott Walker.
Yep, Scott.
When he lost recently to a Democrat, that is cause for pleasure. I mean, I felt that deep down. That's great, right? But on the other hand, I personally don't, and I would argue that Social Alternative and other socialists and activists don't take pleasure at seeing the Democrats.
It's like George Carlin used to say, if you are a Democrat, Republican, you are delusional.
So, yeah, he had some great stuff about that. I love
you.
The more
delusional.
I listen to George Carlin, yeah.
You think they're going to make a change.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm so sorry he's gone. I mean, that's just like, he got tough in his old age. He did the opposite, you know. Oh, when you get older, you get more conservative. I mean, he was always kind of progressive, but he got downright honest, honestly progressive.
Yeah.
And as he got older, he was a bit of a nihilist.
It was
though.
His last analysis before he went, he said.
Oh, he was great. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We can't say
something on the air. But yeah, George Carlin was like, people would push him because everything he said, he reminds me of this professor I had in college. I had an ecology professor that, it was my first ecology course, and I really enjoyed it. And I thought I was switching my major to ecology, and I was going to become an environmental activist. And he would give these wonderful lectures about, you know, scientifically based lectures about environmental problems caused by capitalism. But he would never say capitalism. He would never say the system. He would just say caused by X, Y, and Z.
Do you think it's because he was probably told not to get into politics?
No, I think it's because he was a sincere, he had sincere problems in his brain. He was sincerely, did not connect the scientific wing with the political wing. He was conservative. I'm pretty sure he really was conservative. Mm-hmm. Everything he said mitigated against his own politics. That's my point. He would get to the end of a lecture, and the next word should have been socialist revolution, so we can plan the economy internationally and not, you know, kill people around the world for profit mongering. And he would never even start to go there. Never even hint that's where you should go next. And I was political, you know, politically forming then in some ways. And I would just raise my hand and say things somewhat mild or somewhat radical. And he wouldn't say anything, you know, and just whatever, you know.
I had that kind of professor for economics.
Yep.
Services. and goods. I'm like, okay, yeah, yeah. That's why everybody's sleeping.
Right.
I'm like, you're so bored. It's just like economy, economics is so boring for, you know, this.
I started to take economics courses, and what they would do would, the a couple of the professors I had, so I got to thinking this is maybe a trend, maybe not, I don't know. They would make things so deliberately convoluted, so deliberately complex that you you wouldn't have any opinion at the end of it. You would just have to regurgitate their,
you're bemused,
their,
you're like,
complex
what?
Formulas
what just happened?
That didn't work. They were completely full of it. I mean, their stuff, their own analysis didn't work.
I wish I could go back at the time and just in the middle of the class just drop capital, boom, right on the thing. Yeah, that. Read that and tell me. We'll get back.
I
to
saw them. People do that. I saw people do stuff like that.
Read that. Get that Sam Adams. What's the who's the guy? The pro. Not Marx, the other guy that was for American capitalism.
Wealth of Nations, Adam Smith.
Adam Smith.
But Smith was not, Smith had criticism of capitalism too. It's a little more complicated, but you're right. But see, the thing is, I challenged an economics professor one time along these lines, and he didn't care. He just didn't care. He just looked at me.
No comments, right?
No comments. Just, you know, got back to his, like, this obscuritant. Is that the word, obscuritant? I don't know. Obscuritism.
Obscurity.
You know, sort of a religious approach to economics. Anyway, Marxism is a scientific approach to, you know, political economy, all that stuff. So anyway, getting back to this... This analysis put forward by Social Alternative on the elections, so far it's pretty similar to what you heard in the corporate media, except that our ultimate point here is to point out that we still need an alternative to the Democrats on the left of, you know, mass party that would not take corporate money in all its forms and that would be for working people and youth and so on. But within that narrative, there is some things that happened that we point out here, or that was pointed out here. There was the election of self-described socialists. I would have put self-described like with underlined bold, but it just says self-described socialists in this article, who won, including Julia Salazar going to the New York State Senate, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Rashida Tlaib. Both heading to Congress. Tlaib is one of the two Muslim American women elected to Congress, an historic first. Now, I was aware of Tlaib's candidacy, and I started to research it, and in some ways it's progressive, and some ways it very much isn't. And one of the ways that it isn't is in terms of imperialism, even in terms of Israel. Despite she's a Muslim, she's very much got a conservative position on Israel, believe it or not.
And what is the conservative position on Israel like?
She's just very uncritical of the things that, you know, whether it's the Gaza, attacks.
What's the word? She's not for Palestine independence?
Or no, didn't say that.
Palestinian
didn't
independence.
Say that. I would urge people to check what I'm saying, because I checked this out months ago. She might have changed her tune a little bit, but I was very surprised actually that there was already a buzz about one of the first Muslims getting elected to Congress, one of two. And so I thought I'd check out, you know, people are calling her, I'm doing this with everybody, by the way, is this really a progressive in any sense? Is it really a socialist? Someone's not a socialist if they run in the Democratic Party. That's my bottom line. That's just my personal thing. If you run as a Democrat, you give up socialism as when you're doing that, because that's a imperialist, capitalist political party. So you can call yourself a socialist, self-describe as a socialist. You're not one when you're involved in that stuff. But I could see some Democrats being more progressive than others, at least on paper or whatever, till they get sucked into the whole thing. So I just want to see her campaign's program, you know? And what I find with a lot of these so-called progressive Democrats is that it's kind of just word of mouth, not backed up on what's really in their program, what they really talk about. So I found her situation to be that way for the most part. She did have some things, I think like Medicare for All or something like that. Mm-hmm. But when it came to foreign policy, so-called, that's the way the corporate media would talk about it, it was quite mainstream, quite conservative, you know. And on the question of Israel, also quite conservative. The Democratic Party is a very conservative position in Israel. They just passed a law. I read, again, this should be fact-checked, but I read there was a law passed that was initiated by Democrats, and it got bipartisan support in the Congress recently, making it a felony to criticize Israel through the promotion of the boycott and divestment thing, BDS, which would be, if that's true, I'm putting a question mark on it because I only read this in one source. If that's true, that's horrible, obviously. I know they were talking about it, and that's bad enough, but to pass it is even worse. So, and that's not saying that I personally support or that Social Alternative supports the boycott divest movement. We support elements of a boycott strategy in certain situations, but the blanket sort of boycott thing we think is kind of impossible, actually, and would hit, you know, left-wing Israelis that want to come over here and speak or something like that, and it would hit maybe trade unions in Israel. I mean, it's we recognize there is a working class in Israel, there is a left in Israel. They don't all go, you know, the political spectrum is more diverse actually than here, and they don't all go along. The political parties don't all go along with kind of a Zionist, what was known as Zionism now, or a Zionist type, approach, you know.
It's like an apartheid.
Yeah. And I don't know. The reason I hesitate a little bit on the Zionist thing is that it's changed over the years as to what that is. There's people now claiming that Zionism equals Israel equals any criticism of Israel or Zionism is anti-Semitic. This is completely false. It's a weird narrative. But there it is. It's out there, you know. And this thing, if it really passed in Congress or if it got proposed, is really a horrible manifestation of that kind of thinking, you know. And as far as I know, this person, this newly elected Congresswoman, Tlaib, is not fighting that stuff, as far as I know. Double check that. So again, going back to the article, quote, while the Democrats now control the House of Representatives, a vicious and reactionary regime is still in place in Washington, and we can't wait until 2020 and the presidential election to change that. We urgently need to build a mass movement centered on the social power of working people that takes on and defeats the agenda of the right and fights to push Trump out. In the coming months, both the Democratic leadership and the new left candidates elected to Congress and state legislature will be put to the test of rising expectations and demands to confront Trump and the ruling class. Now, even though this article was written fairly recently, November 8th, there's been a few things that kind of show the approach of approach of the Democrats is going to be. Pelosi has made different comments about bipartisanship with the Republicans, not being interested in impeaching Trump, and also doing a deal. Well, it's already been a deal and not enforced all the time that she initiated in Democrats in 2007, that any increase in social spending or whatever would have to be earmarked to a tax increase or a cut somewhere. So this is like a fiscal conservative thing the Democrats themselves are doing, which a lot of people wouldn't understand that because they don't see them as doing that stuff, but they do it. And they want to revive that. So they're kind of getting ready to take power again in 2020, and they're getting people ready for that. They've already got power now in the House. They won the House of Representatives, as I just mentioned. And all these things are horrible. The fact that, you know, she wants to do the bipartisanship thing, that they want to take impeachment off the table, and they do this this thing with the I forget the term for it. I've used it on the air before, and I'm just skipping my mind, but this kind of funding thing where they care more about the deficit than they do about anything else, basically. They care about the people of having this. I think they don't call it level funding, but there's another term for it where, again, they are putting forward an austerity kind of budget that, well, anything that you want to increase spending on would have to come from taxes, and they mean taxes on us. They don't mean taxes on the rich.
Yeah.
Or through cutting something, and things are already being cut, obviously. The other thing that's happened is that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who's the great fake left hope, in my opinion, so-called progressive, self-described socialist, she has come out since this article and endorsed, well, before this article, she endorsed Cuomo and all the Democrats that were running for the midterm elections. And that got her some heat from some left-wing supporters that were aware of it. Then she did this protest after the elections that got all the lefties that don't know better, in my opinion, all excited about her because she did a protest in Pelosi's office about doing a Green New Deal. And I've had people that are activists tell me, wow, Green New Deal, what a great idea. That idea has been around
Ralph Nader came out, come on, Ralph Nader's been doing it for
the Green Party, socialist alternative, not that I expect you to hear of it from us, but you know, mass organizations, and that it's been out there. Even I think didn't Sanders even talk about that a little bit?
Yeah.
So yeah, anyway, so all of a sudden it's a brand new thing, but it totally, then if you're awake, what happened was that within a week, Ocasio-Cortez said she's open to supporting Pelosi as Speaker of the House. And I think Tlaib said something to that effect as well. So this whole narrative of there's these progressive Democrats, I say check that. Check it out. And then there's the more establishment Democrats, and that they're at odds, and that the progressive ones are sort of winning something. It doesn't bear out with the election results. It does, even if you accept that narrative. But then if you look deeper, it doesn't work. You know, like on questions of imperialism, where all the Democrats just about voted for the war budget that went through, this defense spending budget recently. Where's that narrative?
Yeah.
Doesn't exist.
Or the budget that they gave for the fence to the prince of Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. But also here, where what we're talking about right now, Pelosi being pro-Pelosi or anti-Pelosi. Wow, wait, that little narrative blew up as well. Once you can't separate individual Democratic Party politicians from the institution they have thrown their lot in with, in the political party they have decided to use as a platform. Let's say they're honest, they're well-meaning, they've got progressive issues they want to amplify through the Democratic Party. They don't understand, at least, that those issues are going to get twisted and obscured, actually, through going through the Democratic Party. They're not going to remain the issues that, let me look at Obamacare, for example, versus national health care or single-payer health care. And they have to understand that the small, like we talked about earlier in the show, the small donations funding things is a dream. It's not real. So they're going to go looking for money to get reelected, and they're going to go into the networks the Democratic Party uses, from corporations, from your business. They're not going to be able to keep clean from that. And they're going to block vote and network with the Democrats on all sorts of things. And they're going to go and campaign. Ocasio-Cortez has already been on a unity tour along with Sanders, now ostensibly for progressive, quote-unquote, candidates, except they weren't all progressive. One of them was had been against abortion rights that they campaigned for. And then that turns out to be like this common thing. Like Alicia, who's the person in Boston that got elected? Her name is on the tip of my tongue, and I always screw up her name recently.
She Hispanic?
She's black. And she got elected. She's been in there for 9 years. She's being thrown in with this group of progressives, even though I don't think she is as progressive, very relatively speaking, as Ocasio-Cortez and Salazar. But anyway, Presley. So she got elected. Mealy is embraced by Elizabeth Warren and sent on a unity tour again for establishment Democrats. And then you have back when Sanders caved and gave the nomination to Clinton, and said he would support Clinton. He did. He went out on a unity tour with Tom Perez, who just had been elected the head of the DNC, another you know, establishment centrist. And Sanders held his nose and went around, or maybe enjoyed it, I don't know, went around campaigning for establishment Democrats. So you think you can stay pure as an individual in the Democratic Party? You're freaking insane. So anybody that wants to vote for a pure, self-described socialist in the Democratic Party, I think you're fooling yourself. I think you're just kidding yourself. And there's other ways to interact with, you know, any progressives that vote Democrat or Democratic Party politicians. If they're sincere, hey, we'll fight with the same issues. I didn't see them out going door to door on question one. They could have. You know, there was a thing in Worcester where Jim McGovern showed up, made a 10-minute speech and took off. He didn't go door to door. He left. he took his little minions with him and left. That's the Democratic Party. They want to pretend. You know, but they don't want a real mass movement because that could threaten them, and it will. It will threaten them.
You always see that on like May Day. I've seen that.
May 1st, the Democrats show up.
No, and you know those marches we do in East Boston?
Oh, the immigrant rights. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we'll do that march that goes to Everett.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then in Everett, I remember once it was me, Brian, and Josh. We were just sitting with our red flags. And this Teamster comes up, Democrat, you know.
He was talking Democrat, really. That's interesting.
And then he just left. Like, where the hell did that guy go? I was going to ask him some questions, you know, me and Brian.
It was a real Teamster?
Yeah.
I don't see much of that. Wow, that's interesting.
It was a platform of Teamster, but it was a Democrat.
Okay.
Because I guess the Teamsters were, they set up in that park over Ferry Park over by Everett.
Yeah.
And that's what I told you about the cop coming up to us. It's like, you know, he had a wager with his friend. What does that red flag represent? What does that mean?
Uh-huh.
We're socialists? He's like, oh, okay. He goes right back to his buddy. He's like, you owe me. I told you.
A cop that can identify a socialist. Actually, I wish they didn't, but anyway, whatever. We got to start wrapping up, but I just want to alert our listeners to another article that won't have time to really get into too much. But, so we talked about the voting Democrat is not harm reduction by Andrew Dobbs. Really, really worth reading. Something we didn't get to today, 1918, Revolution Ends First World War as International Radicalism Shakes the World. That's from the Committee for Works International webpage, socialistworld.net, 13 November 2018 by Bob Labbe, L-A-B-I. And then this one that we were just reading from, U.S. Midterm Elections Week and the Republicans. There's more I wanted to get into there, but really quite running out of time. So I'm going to jump to another article that, well, two more. Sorry to throw these out at you so quickly here, but counterpunch.org had a couple articles really worth looking at. One was this weekly article called Roaming Charges that Jeffrey St. Clair does, and it jumps around to a lot of stuff, but it had some good stuff related to the midterms in this most recent issue that came out November 16th. St. Clair is one of the editors of counterpunch.org. And then we have printed as one of the essays on Counterpunch, they print a certain number of articles or essays per week, Barack von Obamenberg, Herr Donald, and Big Capitalist Hypocrisy on How Fascism Happens by Paul Street. Now, this is a very interesting in-depth article with a lot of arguments in it, but I'm just going to mention, because we talked about it earlier, the beginnings of some of the things about the Obama administration and Democrats, and is this really harm reduction and all that. So basically, Street looks at this book called Confidence Men, Wall Street, Washington, and the Education of a President, 2011, by Pulitzer Prize winning author Ron Suskin. Talking about something that happened in March 2009. This is 3 months into Obama's presidency. There's popular rage at Wall Street. This is the Great Recession opening up, right? 2008, 2009. And so the rage at Wall Street was intense. The leading financial institutions were weak and on the defensive. The nation's financial elite had driven the nation and the world's economy into an epic meltdown in the period, and millions knew it. Having ridden into the office partly on a wave of popular anger at the economic power elite's staggering malfeasance, this is Obama's first election, Obama called a meeting of the nation's top 13 financial executives at the White House. The banking titans came into the meeting full of dread, only to leave pleased to learn that the new president was in their camp. For instead of standing up for those who would have been harmed most by the crisis, workers, minorities, and the poor, Obama sided unequivocally with those who had caused the meltdown. Quote, "My administration is the only thing between you and the pitchforks," Obama said. "You guys have an acute public relations problem that's turning into a political problem, and I want to help. I'm not here to go after you. I'm protecting you. I'm going to shield you from congressional and public anger." End quote. For the banking elite, who had destroyed untold millions of jobs, there was, as Susskind puts it, quote, "nothing to worry about," whereas FDR, anyway, I'm going to skip that, as one leading banker told Susskind, "the sense of everyone after the meeting was relief. The president had us at a moment of real vulnerability. At that point, he could have ordered us to do just about anything, and we would have rolled over, but he didn't. He mostly wanted to help us out, to quell the mob. The massive," and then this back to quoting the article, that's the end quote of the bankers, or the banker. The massive taxpayer bailout of the super fat cats would continue along with numerous other forms of corporate welfare for the super rich, powerful, and parasitic. The state capitalist largesse was unaccompanied by any serious effort to regulate their conduct or by any remotely comparable bailout for the millions evicted from their homes and jobs by the not-so-invisible hand of the marketplace. No wonder 95% of national U.S. income gains went to the top 1% during Obama's first term. And then he gets into, I don't know if I have time for this. No, I don't. He gets into the first 2 years that we talked about earlier in the show of Obama, and this also happened under Clinton, where the Democrats were completely in charge of Congress and the presidency and could have passed anything. And he gets into what wasn't passed and also what was passed in terms of Obamacare or the single payer, I'm sorry, or the Affordable Care Act, which was another really actually a corporate handout when all is done and said on that. Maybe we'll get into that next time. So we got about 5 minutes. You know, it's fairly easy to find the dirt on Trump these days, but what one of the problems of not having a...
just watch him speak. He's not
playing. No, Trump is obvious, right? And the intersection of the corporate media.
Did we say
media,
about what he wanted to do? We said it off air about cutting funds because he didn't believe what was happening in California.
Oh yeah, well everyone
cutting
knows about that, right? He went Trump's first thing about the fires in California is to blame, you know, the firefighters and fire control. No, what I'm getting at is though is a more general point is that you know we could stay here all day, and criticize Trump and that would be good. And we do a lot of that. But the point is that without a political party to the left of the Democrats, a real workers' party in this country of some sort, there's a historical amnesia that happens every election cycle. And it happened in the midterms. And we can't let people forget when the so-called alternative of the Democrats are in power, you get a lot of the same policies. You get an equivalency, not an equality, but an equivalency in harm and damage. And we need to get over that. We need to get our own independent political party for working people and youth. And that's what a lot of our discussion is about. So ran out of time. Didn't get into the World War I stuff, which was, wow, I mean, incredible. There was
next
stuff
time.
Next time, yeah. It'll be a new month maybe, but we can still get into it. A new year. No, it'll be a new month. So thanks for listening. We'll go out with Holiday since the Thanksgiving or National Mourning Day is coming up.
Yeah, that's right.
Any last words, Diego?
National Mourning Day, that's right.
You going to go to Plymouth for that?
No, I can't. I got to, unfortunately.
You got to work, yeah. All right, well, thanks.
It's double pay, but it's still.
I need that. Anyway, thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back in a couple weeks. This is Social Alternative Radio. Keep up the struggle.
Power to the people.
Power to the people.